Increasing protein levels in wheat. That's the topic. It can make you money. It might be a good thing for you to do. And that's why we're covering it here on Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve.
Welcome to Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve podcast, where real farmers share real insights and real results to help you improve your farming operation. This episode of Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Claas, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. With a wide range of tractors, combines, foragers, and hay tools, Claas is a family business just as driven, demanding, and dedicated as yours. Go to Claas.com and start cutting your curve with their cutting-edge equipment. And now, here's your host, Damian Mason.
Welcome to another fantastic episode of Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve. I've got Lee Lubers on here, an Extreme Ag guy from way back when out of Gregory, South Dakota. He was on recently on Ag PhD, but it was only for 3 minutes talking about this topic. And that's when I said, let's go a little more in depth so we can help our viewers and listeners make a little bit more money with their wheat crop. Turns out you can increase the protein levels in your wheat. This is something that was completely new to me. I didn't even realize there were protein requirements and that if you go below that level, you get docked. Also, you can get paid a premium, although it's a dirty little world, is what I'm hearing from Lee, to get into that without the elevator trying to screw you out of your premium that you're due. So we're talking about increasing protein levels in your wheat, why you want to do it, how you can do it, the agronomics behind it, and all of the other things you need to know. So I didn't realize this was even a thing. So give us the big picture about the marketplace for wheat, as you just did before we hit record, and then we'll talk about how you go about doing it.
Wheat and protein can get very complicated, and we don't view it just as a way to pick up extra money, but also to prevent ourselves from losing money. Because 12% is the basis for protein on winter wheat, and we have to keep it above 12%.
So I didn't even realize, first off, I didn't even realize there was that much protein in wheat. I mean, it's a carbohydrate product. It's an energy cereal grain. I didn't even realize it was 12% the number. But so you said that of the soft red, hard red, and then spring, one of them tends to have more protein component naturally, and the other one tends to not so much. So go through the hard red winter, soft red winter, and then spring.
Yeah, your hard red winter, that's the most commonly grown wheat worldwide. Yes, it's used for baking and feed uses, multitude of uses. And that has historically the lower protein of the three. Then you get into your soft reds that are raised more east of us, like Temple will raise them and people like that for their eastern half of the U.S. That is kind of bridges the gap between spring wheat and winter wheat. That takes a little bit higher protein. That has more what they call milling qualities. And then spring wheat, that's truly for milling. That's your bread and crackers that you get in the box, your loaf of bread. That's where spring wheat is very critical based on protein. There you need to be in that, you know, you want to be like a 15 and higher, you know. I mean, there's guys that are pushing proteins all the way up to 18% and more by that. But they're able, with spring wheat, you can manipulate spring wheat easier to get more protein. Winter wheat, it's very hard to do.
Okay, so you grow winter wheat. I thought that you were a spring wheat person because you're in the Dakotas, but you're in the south of South Dakota. And you said, no, you go north of us before you really get into more of the spring wheat. So you are a soft red winter. You're a hard red winter wheat.
We are hard red winter. What's raised from Texas all the way up through North Dakota. That's what we are. You got to probably go about 2 to 3 states over before you start getting into soft red.
Like you said, if I grew wheat on my farm in Indiana, it's probably soft red winter wheat.
Yeah, you're getting into soft red.
All right, so you grow hard red winter wheat. You plant it in September, October, and there it is, and you harvest it in July, August, in your part of the world. And you're paid, if you go below 12%, if you take a truckload in, which lots of truckloads come off your fields, if they go in and they are below 12% protein, and that's being monitored with the soil probe, just like moisture and test weight. When they suck that out of the semi to do a test, it also tests protein?
Yeah, every load that comes in, they're probing it. They've got moisture test weight and protein. And if you go under 12%, depending on the year, it could cost you 10, 15 cents a bushel, or it could cost you 50 to 75 cents a bushel, depending on the year of what all is out there in the world being raised for wheat, for quality, for test weight and protein. So it could be your make or break.
So the DOC varies based on the global or at least regional and national production. If there's a whole bunch of protein deficient wheat, we can call it sub 12%, and you're bringing in more sub 12%, there's going to be a greater DOC because the marketplace doesn't need any more sub 12% wheat. Is that an accurate statement?
Exactly. You're going to get penalized a lot harder.
Yeah. Whereas if you're in a year where you just happen to have lower protein wheat, but in general, the market has produced a fair amount of over 12% protein wheat, the DOC's not as great. Because I'm guessing if it's under the 12%, it has less uses. It can't go to as many places. So it goes to cow feed instead of pizza.
Yeah, it does drop the marketability, I guess you could say, of the bushels you raise.
Yeah. Usability of it.
Yeah, usability. Yeah.
So, okay. You are in the one that you said winter wheat is harder to get. You can get bigger volume, bigger quantity, bigger bushels, more yield, but you also generally sacrifice protein. So talk about those, physiological and botanical components of that.
Well, as you work on increasing your wheat yields, historically, your protein levels drop. And it gets to be more of an issue because you're outstripping what you can get into the plant for nutrients. And nitrogen is a big factor on protein. And that's where, like in spring wheat, there are proven ways where you can go in partway through around jointing and later and run liquid nitrogen and thin it with water and provenly boost protein. Where on winter wheat, if you try the same tactic, it's hit or miss. It might be 1 year and five, 1 year and four that it works. So it doesn't have the consistency to pay. So that's not feasible in our acres. So we had to look like, how can we do this, you know, when it doesn't work with winter wheat? So that was a real challenge.
The method that's the most foolproof is to boost nitrogen.
Late season nitrogen.
That's the easiest way to get to increase protein is to throw more nitrogen out there, but that's wasteful. And also, like you said, sometimes it doesn't even work.
Yeah. On winter wheat, the track record is extremely low. It's not even advocated to do it as a common practice. Whereas on spring wheat, you're able to do that because it's a totally different plant.
Right. Okay, so the overuse of nitrogen, which was frowned upon environmentally, and we're going to see more of that. That's not a feasible option anyway. Plus, there's the environmental. Plus, there's the cost, etc. So, how do you go about getting increased levels of protein in your wheat if that's not the way to do it? Planting time, soil. I mean, soil amendments. Do biologicals come into play? Is there something about when you harvest? I mean, there's got to be something here. I don't know.
I know we preach it quite often in Extreme Ag, but the systems approach. And we started looking at it, okay, this could be low-hanging fruit. This could be a real profit for us, but how do we get to it? We're like, okay, we can't go apply late-season nitrogen. That's going to be not responsible, you know, economically or yield-wise or, you know, environmentally, not the thing to do when you start looking at sustainability. So we go, how about can we find ways to increase the efficiency of the nitrogen we're putting on? And that's what we kind of targeted. And that comes into when we are doing our seed treatments in the fall, doing biologicals to help stimulate the soil, so on. Then we started focusing more on the approach of what micros are synergistic, what other nutrients are synergistic with nitrogen. Well, zinc is very synergistic with it. So we started first working with zinc sulfate. That started helping us. And then after getting to know one of the more famous Sendit twins, Chad Henderson, the king of boron, we started working a lot more with boron. And boron is very synergistic with nitrogen, and it helps at the reproductive phases.
All right, and so wait, real quickly, critical. We talk about putting these zinc and boron, when you say they're synergistic to nitrogen, does that mean that they help create more uptake or retention? Or what does it do with the nitrogen to then help?
All the above.
Okay.
It helps with uptake. What we're always looking for in our farm is things that we can do where 1 + 1 = 3.
Yep.
And that's what we started looking at. It's like, how can we do this when we're notoriously, you know, raising a crop that's low in protein? We're trying to keep it at 12%. And as we're getting higher yields, it's more of a struggle. When we're raising 40, 50 bushel wheat, the wheat was starving to death. It wasn't a big thing. You had higher protein. Now we're pushing the plants more, raising a lot more bushels, but the protein wants to come down. So we're like, how can we do this in a sensible manner? Right. And try to get a proven track record. And more the systems approach and filling in the gaps in fertility and looking at all total fertility, all the things that you need to raise that crop. Mm-hmm. Then things started, like yield came up, test weights came up, and protein. We started to gain in all three.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. So nitrogen is something you've known for a while. Then you said we can't go out there and fling nitrogen around. So you threw zinc in, and that did. Where does the zinc or the boron get applied? Is it that time of planting? Is it over the top? Where are we doing this that gets you the bump?
There's a multitude of ways. Dry, you could go at planting time. You could go in early broadcast. Liquid, you can go foliar during the season. That's a common way to do it too. There's some good micro packs out there you can work with. Boron, same thing. Boron cannot be with your seed, so not at planting. That's regardless of the crop. So that is out, but you could do that in your broadcast with your dry. You can also run it, liquid. You can apply it in the crop in the season. You know, and you want to get it in the plant in time. So when it's because it's really key at reproductive time, where it's pollen set, fruit set. That's really what boron is trying to help you with. And it's synergistic with nitrogen. So it's like 1 + 1 = 3.
Yep.
And that's the goal.
All right. So the short answer is you're putting it on in more than one.
Yeah, we have not increased our use of nitrogen. We've changed how we do it, yes. And we've gained across the board.
But putting boron and zinc in at more than one time, mm-hmm. to keep, I guess, maybe it's like it keeps the nitrogen.
Keep the levels up.
That's what's interesting is you throw a little boron and zinc in at three different times throughout the season, and it keeps the nitrogen moving.
Yeah, it keeps you from having a hungry plant, a deficient plant, keeping those levels up. And when we pull tissue tests that at flag time and at heading, and our levels are extremely high, we have great levels. So our plant is not suffering. It's not wanting, needing more. It has what it needs, but we're not putting on more nitrogen, which is a good thing.
Yeah. All right, I want to hear about this. But we'll talk about fertility, dear listener and viewer. I want to talk about Nature's here. Nature's, is one of our business partners. They are awesome friends to work with. We were at their booth at Commodity Classic both days. And in fact, if you were an Extreme Ag member for just $750 a year, the last 2 years, Nature's has paid for your admission into the Commodity Classic, something you should look into, and you might consider becoming an Extreme Ag member. Because if you are a member, you get access directly to guys like Lee for a question and answer platform. You also get the data at the end of the year that these guys crank out on their field trials. And you get special offers like the one I just talked about going to Commodity Classic. So Nature's is focused on providing sustainable farming solutions, helping you get the most out of your crop genetics. You spend the money on the seed. You're out there doing the work. You're working in the field. You're doing everything right. Well, you know what? Now we'll talk about spoon feeding the nutrition. Well, you can do that with Nature's Bio-K. That's right. Their liquid fertilizers are powered by Nature's Bio-K. to target specific periods of influence throughout the growing season via precision placement techniques as a means to mitigate plant stress, enhance crop yield, and boost your farm's return on investment. And after all, farming is a business. That's why we're talking to Lee about making more money. Go to natures.com to learn more about how you can use their products to get the most out of your crops. All right, Lee, there's a premium paid for this, but you said there's a little trickery going on there. Just like the DOC can vary, if you're sub 12% protein, you said the DOC could be 10 cents. It could be 75 cents. Well, and wheat's only, what's wheat hovering around like $6 right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 75 cents on a $6 bushel wheat, I'm guessing, takes you from making a little money to not making money. So that's a problem. So now we say, all right, I'm going to do everything I can to be above that 12% because I can't afford no 75 cent DOC. Now, if I'm over 12%, how can I make a premium?
What we do is we leverage our bushels and the relationships we have in place with grain merchandisers. We show them the samples that we have. And a lot of times we have the high test weights and the high protein. So they come to us for quality because they need us to blend off against all the bushels are getting from the guys that have not addressed it that way.
Yeah.
They're using us to pick up the average.
Yeah, they use you to blend to bring up the average on test weight and protein levels. So you've got to go out and knock off a combine hopper full and then do the testing. You test it there at your place and then you take a picture of it and say, here's what I got.
Yeah, we just go to the elevator so it's unbiased, or two local elevators, and we show them what we've got. And we talk bushels, and next thing you know, I mean, if we're not getting the whole premium, so be it. If we're splitting it with them, that's better than losing or gaining zero from it.
Yeah, so
it adds up to real dollars.
It becomes kind of a negotiation. Like your combines are ready to roll, and you say, let's peel off a few bushels here, go in and say, we think we're going to get. So is that how it works? You go in and say, we think we're going to get 63 bushels per acre or whatever you get there in Gregory. What the hell do you get in Gregory's, South Dakota? It depends on the moisture, I know. 83 bushels? I don't know.
We want to raise the most bushels we can every year.
So you go in and say, we're going to get this many bushels per acre. And when we and then here's what it is. And then they test it and say, oh, man, your test weight's 61 pounds and your protein levels are 14%. And they say, that looks good. And you say, well, I know it looks good. Now, what are you going to give me for it? Is that how it works?
Exactly. And we leverage those relationships. We'll put it out to a half dozen companies, and they're all on equal footing. They all can decide what works best for them. And sometimes it depends what the next step in the processing chain is. One year we got a very good premium. It was very specialized. There was a large pet food company and they wanted our wheat. They started looking at the numbers. It was blended in with the pet food blend and they wanted our wheat, so many loads per week for so many months.
Yep.
And it was very segregated. So we never know what it's going to be. We just
have the elevator might be not trying to screw you. They're just looking at where they can go with it and what the demand is downstream for them. And that's what the kind of offer they can give to you, I'm guessing. Yes.
Yeah. Basically we became our own elevator. So, we'll do the test local, but, usually they're not even in the ball game.
Who's that?
For where our wheat's going to go. We're going to go the next step up. It's going to be to a processor.
Who's usually not even in the ballgame?
Local elevators. We're our own elevator.
Okay.
Because we don't run 8 to 5, you know.
Yep.
We combine whenever the weather's right, 7 days a week. We'll load trucks at midnight or 5 in the morning. We don't care.
Right. What about then you acting as your own elevator? You've got now enough. You've got, it's because you've built a network. You reach out and start saying, here's what we got. Are you to the point where somebody, the pet food company, calls you and says, hey, we're going to be needing stuff starting in August. What do you got?
That's where those long-term relationships come into play. That network that you build, it doesn't happen overnight. Once they get to know you, then and I think we're headed into more of that. It's more, I don't know if you can call it identity preserved or more. The end users want to know where it's coming from.
Yeah. Well, we talk about like
they want traceability.
They talk about source verified, traceability, all that sort of thing. So is this coming? Is this going to be a thing? Like, in other words, 5 years from now, is this going to be a thing that a whole bunch of people of a certain, if you're growing 40 acres of wheat, nobody cares. No, not being offensive, but the point is, of a certain scale, you're going to then say, it's not really a contract, but it's like, I've got one of three places that probably want this because they know I'll be. And by the way, we're talking about that sort of thing. You kind of got that going already. Is it going to be more commonplace 5 years from now?
We feel it's a wave you're going to want to ride. You want to be ready for it. Yep. Between sustainability programs, carbon programs, regenerative agriculture, traceability, how things are raised, how they're produced, there's just going to be more coming all the time.
Lee, what do you, 12%, below 12%, you start getting into dock territory. What, in the last few years, what has your wheat averaged? Are you at 14? I mean, because I'm just, as a reference, are you at 18? Are you, you know, you're not double, you're not at 24. So
we've been running a lot of 14 to 15% protein on winter wheat, which is exceptional. And also getting high yields and high test weights, you know, anywhere from, 62 to 64 pound.
Well, 12% to 15% doesn't sound like much, but that's 20 to 25% above normal or above where the dock is. That's significant. And then, like you said, there's a premium in general. And we're not trying to get in your pocketbook too. I don't want to count all of your money, just part of it. How much has the premium been the last couple of years? Is it 20 cents? Is it 50 cents?
It'll vary by the year, but I'd say
test weight probably varies a little bit.
Pretty good window. What it's enabling us to do, it opens so many more doors to where we can go with the wheat.
But there's a money attached to it. Is it safe to say 25 cents?
Yeah. If we're not gonna gain financially, why do it?
Right. You know, is it safe to say 25 cents?
Yeah. Easy.
Premium? Mm-hmm. Easy. Yeah. Agronomically, does this change anything? Is your soil looking different after 3, 4, 5 years of putting in the zincs and the borons to get the nitrogen? Does it deplete nitrogen? Does it change anything? Does putting more protein in a wheat head deplete the soil of anything that then 1 and 3 years from now you've got to amend?
Zinc we have focused on for better part of 20 years. So we have good levels. And boron has been more of a 5-year process. And that one leaches. That one, you pretty much need it every year. Zinc, boron, we can build our levels. Boron is just a standard practice.
You said to get the protein level up, you've got to make sure you're using nitrogen. Does it deplete more nitrogen from the soil? Or is it just use more of what's applied? Because usually we're just getting so
much better utilization.
Yeah, there you go.
Because our rates have not gone up.
Which is great.
Our yields have gone up. Test weights have gone up. Protein levels are gone up. And we have not increased our nitrogen application.
Your nitrogen application, which is great. Yeah. I mean, that's an environmental story here that we should put this on the end of on our flagpole.
We're actually looking seriously at, we're doing some trials in our farm about even, and we have some this year about even going to do some comparisons about even reducing 25 units.
Yeah,
and that'd be huge in the bottom line. Money saved is money made, especially in the environment we're in now.
You always give me
producer always wins.
You always give me money saved is money made. You always give me sound bites. Money saved is money made.
Redneck wisdom, as it's referred to.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been to Gregory, South Dakota, you go there, you just can go and just sit at the feet of the bald man known as Lee Lubbers, and he'll just keep cranking it out. He doesn't get very many visitors, so he'll probably actually take the time and share with you. All right, my last couple of points on this. Who originally asked for this product? Was it just a matter of the marketplace needed 12% or more to make it work, to make the wheat, you know, perform the duty of making flour or pizza crust or crackers or whatever? Was there a time in you've been raising wheat since you were a kid? Was there a time when nobody cared and all of a sudden this started becoming a thing? Because I don't know that I've heard a lot about this until recently.
Seems like, you know, 12% just always been there as the guideline, but there's been more of an emphasis on it, especially as people are starting to increase yields as we go, as we progress. So that's where there's like more bushels of lower protein wheat getting raised.
Yeah.
Because the nutrient factor isn't totally addressed.
Yep.
And yes, you're raising bushels, but the quality's slipping.
So will we do this with other crops? Will we see, you know, we talk about carbon intensity score, and Kelly, our friend Kelly Garrett's very excited about that we're going to be getting a premium on, carbon intensity. And we saw high oleic soybeans, which I'm still not even completely understanding. We're going to have to do an episode about that someday. But will we see a thing where protein premium wheat is a thing, and now it's also protein premium corn or something? Will we see this in other places, do you think, where there's a chance to add 25 cents a bushel?
We've seen it in corn when we have with real good test weights. We've even had large feed mills analyze samples of our corn, and they've wanted to segregate it and give us a protein or a premium.
A premium on your protein.
Protein premium, but a premium for it. And that's the one common theme that we've always picked up on, is when people always say they raised a really good crop, they never say it was poor quality. They go hand in hand. I've never seen anybody win NCGA in any state and say, man, I did awesome, but oh man, the test weight was terrible.
Yeah, right.
No, they have great test weights. You're raising a better product. The quality and the yield is going hand in hand. And we see it in our own operation too. Even on soybean test weight, we see the same thing. Where when we start showing our test weights, you know, okay, the basis for wheat is 60 pounds, corn is 56, soybean 60. If you give me 64 pound wheat and you give me at least 60 pound beans instead of a 57, and if you give me 61 pound corn versus 56, you're getting more. You're raising pounds. It's converted to bushels, but
right. Well, as we always say, yeah, you know, the truck goes across the scale. It measures the pounds. It doesn't get out a bushel basket and then scrape off the top like we're, you know, baking a cake. So yeah, you throw 5 more pounds on, there's a whole bunch of more bushels that you just grab per acre based on 4 more pounds of test weight, or 3 more pounds, or 5 more pounds of test weight. This is interesting. And I'm always wondering down the road, you know, we talk about, you said that sometimes they'll try and needle you and not give you the premium. But when you know what's going on, when you realize that most of the bushels that are raised are 12 or sub 12% protein, then you realize you've got something that they need.
Well, the way we view it, we're responsible for paying our own bills. So the way we approach it, yes, we need each other. We need the grain merchandisers that we work with, but there's multiple ones out there. And the way we approach it, we show them what we've got. And then we say, give us your best offer. And if you don't get it, don't whine about it. Then maybe you come back stronger next time. Because really, they're trying to make some money, so are we. We're trying to make a living, so are we. So are they. I mean, we're trying to, you know, make it work for ourselves and for our kids. So it's like, you know, instead of going back and forth, oh, well, we bid this, what so-and-so bid? No. Give us your best shot and don't whine about it. If you didn't get it, and then if they call, just say, okay, well, next time maybe you'll be more motivated. I mean, it's just, I guess, grain merchandisers, I don't get a lot of Christmas cards from them, and I don't care. You know? I mean,
the other part of it is, I think one of the educational aspects of this, we talk a lot about agronomics, but now we're talking about the business side of it. I think if I'm listening to this and I'm a producer, I'm starting to realize I don't need to just take what the damn elevator is going to give me. I mean, like you said, much of the wheat that is produced is winter, and that's where you can get yield, but you won't get protein. Much of the wheat that then goes across the scale at the elevator probably is sub 12%. If you are over 12%, you should do the sampling and then go about selling it, meaning go about getting, reaching out to places and saying, so we can make people money right here versus them being price takers. They can be price askers is what I'm hearing here on a premium protein wheat product.
The hard, cold realities of it is they're trying to buy it as cheap as they can to make money, and you're trying to get as much as you can to turn a profit.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're trying to find that middle ground.
If you're a wheat producer,
that's the nice way of saying it.
Okay. And since I like your hard ass approach, though, so since you're an advisor on the wheat stuff, then the answer would be if you're going to grow wheat, look at ways to increase your protein levels and thereby do a sampling. And then if you're over 12%, do not just take what the local elevator is telling you that they're going to pay you, because it's got a premium attached to it. And that premium is going to vary based on one place to the next, wherever they have to go with it, and the need that they have for premium protein, excess 12% wheat, if we're talking about. There could be a premium attached to that. You should seek out a better offer.
One of the reasons we make our grain bins pay is because when the grain is in our bins, we have control of it.
Yeah.
And if it's in somebody else's bins, if you take it to wherever and just dump it, you've lost control of it. Yes, you are entitled to get paid for that grain, but you've effectively handed over all control of it. We want to maintain control of it, and that gives us leverage in negotiating.
If you wonder about, he's Lee Lubers. He's also the soundbite machine. Money saved is money made. Give us your best shot and don't cry if you don't get it. I can go on and on. I already jotted down those two. Anyway, I think we got it here. We're talking about increasing protein levels in wheat. This is a great subject. It's something that I was very intrigued by, and that's why I wanted to cover it. Lee, you're awesome. You got anything else on the way out the door? Any more redneck wisdom soundbites from Gregory, South Dakota on the way out the door?
I would just recommend everyone who raises wheat in their operation to just focus on, the systems approach, fill in the pieces on nutrients, work on the synergistic approach of making your nitrogen, more available in the plant. And there's multiple benefits, including protein.
He's Lee Lubers. He's an extreme ag guy, and he also is a wheat guy that doesn't take a lot of crap from grain merchandisers, because he's going to increase his protein levels. He's going to get paid for it in wheat. Till next time, thanks for being here. My name's Damian Mason. This is Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve.
That's a wrap for this episode of Cutting the Curve. Make sure to check out extremeag.farm for more great content to help you squeeze more profit out of your farming operation. Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Kloss, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. Visit kloss.com and start cutting your curve with cutting-edge equipment.